And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, this weekend we have a guy in England getting crowned king and a guy in America wanting to get crowned king. The guy in America has a whole movement that would like him to be crowned king. The guy in England, two-thirds of the English people are indifferent to him becoming king and indifferent to having a king. It's an interesting contrast, given that we had the revolution to get rid of the king.
Yeah. when you look at the pomp and the circumstance, it makes you glad that we did.
Yeah.
But of course, we didn't get rid of the king because of the pomp and circumstance. We got rid of the king because of the way he treated his quote-unquote subjects. In America, we are, the people are sovereign. Over there, it's somebody who inherits the throne by birth.
But we have a movement, a political movement, a MAGA movement, which holds that the people should not be sovereign, which holds that if the people don't vote the way the MAGA movement feels they should vote, the vote should be not counted or done over or just ignored, and which is aggressively passing laws in state after state to make sure that that's exactly what happens. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The Republican Party has, as David Frum said presciently years ago, that if they cannot win democratically, they won't give up on what they believe in or what they want to happen. They'll give up on democracy. And they've proven it. And neither the votes in 2020 or the votes in 2022 seem to discourage them. They only seem to feel that it's more urgent now that they pass more draconian laws even quicker. We know it. We've lived with gerrymandering forever. The extremes of gerrymandering, though, have gotten much worse. And as we talked about last week with North Carolina, where they decided that it wasn't, they reversed the previous Supreme Court ruling that was less than a year old in order to preserve the severe gerrymander and to preserve really minority rights. Now we have down in Texas, they're using some of the problems, the mechanical problems of the last election where voting districts ran out of paper, that in order to say we don't care what the people voted. If the governor and the secretary of state think that there were impediments to everybody getting a chance to vote because of running out of paper or something, we can just negate the vote of the largest cities in Texas. They only apply to cities of over or counties of over 2 million people, which of course are Houston, Dallas, San Antonio. Austin, the Democratic areas of the state,
right?
And from state to state, we see that over and over again. Look at what they did down in Jackson, Mississippi. They installed a system that overrode the majority of the people, where some group could be exempted from that.
They set up a whole new judicial system and a whole new police force to avoid the overwhelmingly African-American majority vote.
Yeah, talk about apartheid.
Yeah.
I suppose in some ways it's better than what happened years ago in Wilmington, North Carolina, when, in the Jim Crow era where the blacks won the election and the local offices and the whites just rioted and murdered and forced all the blacks out.
Burnt down Wilmington.
Yeah, that was Wilmington, North Carolina. Yeah,
yeah.
It just, but that's hard. That's
well, in Tennessee, they expelled the two black lawmakers because they were rude. They did, but the main thing that they were rude about was they didn't like what they were saying. In Montana, they expelled the transgender lawmaker because they didn't like what she was saying. In Georgia, the governor just signed into law the right to get rid of any district attorney elected in the state of Georgia that he wants to get rid of. That was caused by Fannie Willis, who's going after Trump.
Yeah,
in Atlanta,
very, very seriously. Now, you know, I've always thought that that case with the phony electors was a very strong fraud case, and apparently, she's been going at it and has gotten some people to turn state's evidence with immunity. You know, Donald Trump is really, really sweating on that one.
Well, if she really has gotten people to turn state's evidence, then Giuliani is in danger.
Yep.
Then those lawyers are in danger. Eastman is in danger. Trump is in danger. A lot of them are in danger of successful prosecution, of being convicted for what they did, and which was wrong, which was criminal.
Yeah. And we found out, you know, who's paying for the lawyers. There was she alleged there was conflicts of interest in things, you know, and we've seen that in some of the other cases. I believe the case down in Florida with Jack Smith, that there was an issue as to who what the lawyers were telling witnesses. There was another case where, when the January 6th committee was investigating that young woman, originally, one of Trump's lawyers had told her to be forgetful. You don't have to tell everything that you know. And she went out and got better counsel and spilled the beans on that sort of thing.
And now the lawyer is in trouble, as he should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other thing behind all of this is the money that's in politics. And how it's being spent and trying to control things.
But the point is, you have a unified movement. Like you say, there's a group of people reactionaries prepared to put up the money to make this work. There are organizers who are prepared to organize to get this in shape. There are activists who are prepared to go into the street to do whatever needs to be done to intimidate their enemies. There are lawyers who are prepared to go into court and lie and distort the law, and academics who are prepared to go into classrooms and raise people with lies about history and about the significance of the history of the country. There's an entire population growing up that knows almost nothing about American history, absolutely nothing about geography, that can barely do arithmetic.
Or civics.
Or civics isn't taught in most of the country.
Right.
It's not taught in most of the country. People can't even fail it because they don't study it.
I've written an article about that. It's going to be in the Scranton Times in about 10 days.
Well, who's going to be able to read it?
Well, yeah, they teach reading in school anymore. They don't.
But the fact is that the nationwide in testing high school kids and junior high school kids, only a third come up to the minimum acceptable standard as defined by the test makers. Two-thirds, in other words, can't come up to the minimum. Now, a third of the students that enter high school don't graduate. You know that they're not able to come up to the minimum. These people have managed to, over the last 50 years, raise a population incapable of participating in modern civilization. They just don't have the skills. They haven't been taught. In Florida, this is really well advanced because, as an example, DeSantis took over a college called New College. So, I think it was a liberal arts college.
The liberal arts
that
college
had a very rigorous program, somewhat modeled after the Great Books program up in Maryland, it emphasized
classics.
Learning how to be a critical thinker. So DeSantis said, well, this is communist. You can't have this. This is anti-American. So he got rid of the board, and he appointed a new board and a new administration. and fired a bunch of the professors. And the first thing they did was get rid of their program for making sure that minority students are in the college. And the next thing they did was install intercollegiate sports. That's interesting, right?
Well, I don't want to talk about that in just a moment, but there's also another movement, and I don't know if they did this.
Oh, they got rid of tenure there, too.
Tenure. Yeah. And so professors have no, and I think they did it throughout the state, or they're trying to do that throughout certain states. So professors have no job security, so that if you don't toe the line that we want you to toe, you're...
That's right.
You know, you're going to be out of a job.
That's right. Tenure is understood by everybody.
Now, I want to get
to be a bar toward getting professors because of their point of view. So here you have a group of people whose job is to explore ideas, to do research into things that nobody's done research into before, to bring out truths that nobody's brought out before. By nature, it's controversial. They're protected by tenure. And now they want to get rid of tenure, which guarantees that you will lower the academic level of the entire country. The entire country, not just that you'll menace this or that professor. All professors, all intellectual activity will conform to the right-wing dominance.
Sure, and the right-wing control of the media and everything. But I do want to, you know, and of course this ties into a separate movement that really wasn't political, but you know, in Pennsylvania, we've had issues about funding education. We've had it funding primary schools and secondary schools. We've talked about that the formula in Pennsylvania has been shortchanging school districts where people can learn things like history. But we've also had a problem in funding our higher education schools. Pennsylvania has, I believe at one point, they may still have more colleges and universities than any other state. And a lot of the state-affiliated schools have been in financial distress. They've been losing populace of student body. They've had to consolidate some of the schools. You know, there's different levels of the schools. And we learned in the past week or so that Penn State, which is the jewel of state education, that they are going to spend $700 million on refurbishing their football
stadium. Say that again? How much?
They are going to $700
million. What are they going to do? They're gold plating the plate. What? How do they do that? How do you spend $700 million?
I don't know. They're going to $70 million. The $70 million is the first phase. Is just for
planning. I'll do it for less.
How to do this? Yeah.
You want? Don't they have a stadium?
Well, this doesn't have any. This doesn't have anything to do with state funds. This all comes from the athletic fund, which is funded primarily from football, because they have a stadium where they get 100,000 people every, you know.
So in other words, they already have a stadium that seats 100,000. So why do they need $70 million to?
Yes, they expanded it 20 years ago. They, under Joe Paterno, they expanded it to 100,000. You know, to make it in there with the Michigans and the Rose Bowl and things like that. And, you know, we've talked previously about the fact that in, I think, three quarters of the states, the highest paid state employee is either the football coach or the basketball coach. And, again, this is priorities. And it kind of reminds you.
Wait a minute. The whole thing is a little weird.
And
the football program is run by the college in order to raise money for the college. So the argument for spending $700 million is that the money doesn't come from the college. That's what they're saying. It comes from the football program. But the money that the football program gets is supposed to go to the college to help education. So if they're spending $700 million on the stadium, they're not spending the $700 million on upgrading education, right?
That's correct.
It's a different business.
They're running
it's a business, right?
Universe. It's a parallel universe. There's the education.
It's a separate industry.
And
right. If they charge rent, they would make out better.
It reminds me of going down to ancient Rome, where you feed the people bread and circuses, and the circuses become the important thing to keep people away from thinking about what needs to be thought about. And when you look at the Trump playbook, it's about circuses. The Apprentice. It's about the show. That's what people are drawn to. When they go to the rallies, they want to. It's a whole show. We've seen, the cottage industries that spring up around with tents and backs of pickup trucks and things, selling vendors selling stuff for the people that are coming to see the show. And of course, none of that teaches people civics or.
No, it prevents them from knowing
really is about.
What their government should be about. It prevents them from knowing that they actually could have the government that helps them rather than the government that is alienated from them and that just uses them, where their only role in the government is to be mobilized to support the interests of people like Jeffrey Yaz, the hedge fund guy, who is the Pennsylvania's preeminent supporter of right-wing politics, right?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we learned this week that he had entered the fray of the Philadelphia mayoral race. The liberal wing of the party, the Bernie Sanders wing, had endorsed this Asian American woman. There's never been a woman mayor of Philadelphia by the name
of Helen Jin.
Kim or Jim. Jim. And I believe there's been some money from the Soros organization. So Jeffrey Yaz is now spending money on anti-
Not just money.
Jim ads.
Close to $1 million so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And, that's just the one county of Philadelphia. It's just the one county.
Well, all of that adds up. I mean, didn't you tell me that the Republican strategist, Stu Stevens, did a study about the 116 judges who have been members of the Supreme Court from the time of the founding of the country to this second, right?
Yeah. And I haven't independently verified it, but what he said is every of the 116 judges, and they have to be confirmed by the Senate, all but five were confirmed by the votes of senators representing a majority of the country. A lot of them, particularly in the last century, were almost unanimous confirmees. But there are five that have been confirmed to the Supreme Court who were confirmed by the votes of a Senate that represented less than the majority of the country. And all five are currently sitting on the court. That's where we've come to. It's back to this minority rule. It's back to what we keep telling people about to read Democracy in Chains by Nancy McLean. It's part of what I keep talking about with the Ann Nelson book and the billionaire class. We have Antonin Scalia Law School there at George Mason, again funded by the Koch brothers,
and consciously created, just within the last 20 years, as the right wing alternative to all the other law schools in the country, especially Yale and Harvard.
Yeah, and we haven't had we've had other right wings. We have Ave Maria. We have Liberty. We have Regents. If you remember, the George W. Bush administration was loaded with people from Regents, which was the Pat Robertson School. But when we talk about Harvard and Yale, I mean, what are the conservatives or the right wingers complaining about? you got Clarence Thomas, Roberts, Alito, you know, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch. Where did they go to school? They went to either Harvard or Yale. The Ted Cruz's went to Harvard. Tom
right,
Cotton,
but these, now, if you look at the lower courts, you have an enormous number of judges that are on the lower courts that come out of George Mason University. And you know that if it was founded to provide an ideological bias for libertarianism, which is what it is, and libertarian and a racist interpretation of the law, which is what it is, that's what these guys were taught. That's what these guys are going to have a jurisprudence doing.
Yeah, and then that goes back to the Lewis Powell memo to the Chamber of Commerce, said that we have to get control of academia, the professors, and we have to get control of the courts. And of course, now it isn't good enough. Now it isn't good enough just to get people on the court. Now you have to buy them and fund them with millionaire and billionaire money, like that we're seeing with Gorsuch and with Clarence Thomas now. Every week something comes out about Harlan Crow and the things that he's done. I mean, first it was, you know, we turned out that there were these lavish trips that somehow Clarence Thomas thought fell under ordinary hospitality, like your next door neighbor inviting you over for Thanksgiving dinner.
And you mean a private airplane to Bali? That's different than being invited over to my house to dinner? I don't know. I cook pretty good. No, I don't. That's true.
But you don't have a landing strip. And then we found out that Harlan Crow had bought the house that Clarence Thomas and his mother owned and was renovated it and was letting her live there rent free. That was another piece. And now this week we found out that wasn't enough, that apparently there's a young man, Clarence Thomas's grandson, that he's responsible for and has raised, and Harlan Crow has paid for this young man's tuition to school.
But we're not for
tens of thousands of dollars.
Any kind of program to advantage poor black people. In fact, isn't Clarence Thomas against? He's against that, right?
Right.
By your own bootstraps. That's the only American way, right?
Yeah. And of course, then Clarence Thomas's wife, we've had previous issues about, but now we found out that Leonard Leo, who was the head of the Federalist Society for all these years, laundered money through an organization with Kellyanne Conway that paid tens of thousands of dollars to Ginny Thomas, but he wanted specifically not to name Ginny Thomas. The things were invoiced through a separate.
It's more than tens of thousands. It would amount to hundreds of thousands. Yeah.
Well, there were two different things there. This was one, and then there were others where they supported a group. Harlan Crow supported a group with $600,000, and about $200,000 of that went.
Well, now how about John Roberts, the supposedly clean Thomas, Chief Justice? Yeah, $10.3 million in headhunter fees for suggesting to law firms who they might hire on their staff.
You know, I just want to get back to Clarence Thomas for a minute. On one of his disclosure forms, he even indicated that one of his rich benefactors had paid for tires for his car. I mean,
why should he?
Does he pay for anything?
Why should he?
That's it. Why should it? But there's no shame. There's no recusal. And one thing that disturbed me was when the Senate, and Sheldon Whitehouse has been all over this, and so has Dick Durbin, said we want Chief Justice Roberts to testify. We want to discuss these things. And Roberts sent back a letter saying no. And then there was a letter, I don't know if it's a separate letter, that was signed by all nine justices saying that we can police ourselves. We don't need you to look into this and to do things. And that, you know, was it Stoney Sotomayor said something about the stench of the court? Why she signed on to that letter, I don't know, or Kagan or even Jackson. they need to stand up. You know, this thing about, you know, the fraternity of the Supreme Court, where we all just get along, you know, like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia went to the opera together. That stops at the policy door. That stops at the ethics door.
Elitism brings you to this. You know, you can't say if meritocracy leads to elitism, and elitism brings you to this. There's nothing you can do about it. In the end, you can ask them to regulate themselves, but they have no need to do so, and you don't have the power to make them to do so unless the Congress forces it.
Well, you're right.
Well,
and
they're not going to.
You don't think the Republicans?
But even the Democrats won't. Some of the Democrats will.
Not. Yeah. It's this. You know, there's a book about the meritocracy and what we've lost. But I mean, you do want people who are competent and able and thinkers in these positions. You don't want Roman Huruska's Supreme Court. If you remember, even mediocre people need.
Yeah, but you don't need clever reactionaries. Clever, you know, that's
right.
That's who these people are.
These people are.
It's not meritocracy that matters. It's what they believe that matters. When people say the law is above ideology, the law is above nonsense. The law is the legal expression of ideology. That's exactly what it is. It forms the structure within which everybody else is able to function. It justifies it and it protects it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be. It could be changed.
Yeah.
The Congress could change it, but the Congress has to be led by different people than leads it today. It has to have a different composition than the composition today. This Congress won't change it.
No.
Mitch McConnell, who now says he lines up with the House Republicans and saying that if Biden doesn't accept fiscal restraint and budgetary restraint, he will not lift the debt ceiling. He will not lift the debt ceiling. How about that? He's supposed to be the adult.
This is part of their strategy. What they want to do. Yeah, you're supposed to be the adult. And what maybe that concussion had.
Or maybe it brought him to his senses, made him realize what the Republicans really believe.
You know, this is part of the Republican strategy. Make government not work.
Just like their tax cut strategy is defund the government so we can say the government is too big. It can't pay for itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Because then it only helps ordinary people. It doesn't let us do things. Talking about, I saw a quote from that guy, Vivek. I can't remember his last name. He was running for president on the Republican ticket. He wants to get rid of all the agencies.
Yeah, which, by the way, the court might do.
Basically,
the Supreme Court might exactly do that in one of the cases coming up now.
Well, they won't get rid of them.
That's the same
away
thing,
their
right?
Ability to function. Of course, yeah. But he just wants to get rid of the, you know, and nobody's challenging on this. You want to get rid of the food?
Well, that's Steve Bannon, right?
Buddy. You want to? Yeah, that's Steve Bannon. Bannonism. And of course, Bannon now is the power behind RFK Jr.
Exactly.
So he's working it from both ends. It's not enough to have the Republicans.
And why not? Anyway, we're done for this week.
Yeah. But before we go, I want to mention, we mentioned the courts. This week, Julia Munley, a judge that I have worked with, I know well. I remember when she, you know, as a lawyer, she's on the Common Pleas Court in Lackawanna County. She got appointed by Joe Biden to the federal middle district court where her father served. And I can tell you that the Munleys are people that, don't buy into this privilege. They understand what government is about and what the power of the courts really should be used for rather than to advance.
But she still has to get through the Judiciary Committee,
and,
which isn't going to happen if Feinstein stays at home in California. Right?
So we hope that Dianne Feinstein has a very quicker recovery.
We'll see. We'll see you next week.
We will see you next week. Take care.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.